Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. In 1966, a teen magazine called Datebook published a quote from John Lennon, in which he said that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. Well, the uproar that followed, especially in the South, included protests, Beatles records being burned, Beatles songs being banned from the radio, and even threats to the Fab Four themselves. Today, Kanye West releases his new album, Yeezus, which includes the song I Am a God. And the national reaction is, oh, there goes Kanye being Kanye again. Now give me the album. Yeezus is one of the new releases that music writer Lizzie Goodman will review for us today on Soundcheck. Also, we have live music from Ireland's classically trained pop singer and opera composer Julie Feeney. But first, let's kick off Soundcheck's summer movie series. Over the next three shows, we'll cover music in movies, like the upcoming zombie blockbuster World War Z, and the hilarious indie film The History of Future Folk. On tomorrow's show, actress Greta Gerwig will talk about the film Frances Ha, which uses a David Bowie song quite prominently. Speaking of which, here's a clip from today's film. It took her minutes, took her nowhere. In the background, the song Young Americans by David Bowie. Now, Bowie's voice is easy enough to pick out, but listen to those backup singers. There's another famous voice wailing there, that of the late Luther Vandross. Vandross was the rare backup singer who went on to his own solo career. But now a new film shines the spotlight away from the big stars and onto those backup singers. Morgan Neville directed the film. He's here with me in the studio, and so are two of the stars of the film, singers Darlene Love and Mary Clayton. To the three of you, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hello.
Morgan, let me start with you, since I suspect you won't get a word in edgewise later on. Your film focuses on almost literally the unsung heroes of music, of pop music especially. What was the impetus to do this?
I mean, the impetus came from the film's producer, Gil Friesen, who used to run A&M Records. And Gil was a legendary record man. And he had been out of the business for a while, but he always had an affection for backup singers, and he knew something was interesting about their lives. And when he came to me, he said, I want to make the best film we could possibly make to celebrate the lives of backup singers and what they've contributed, the ups, the downs, everything. And I said, that's an amazing idea. What's the take? What's the film? He said, I have no idea. He said, that's your job.
So one of the things that you did was you found some extraordinary footage, not just, you know, David Bowie mid-70s with Luther Vandross in the background, but Vandross himself with his backup singers, the concert from Bangladesh, and, you know, all these amazing live performances. Did you know that stuff was out there?
I didn't. It was actually incredibly difficult to research this because nobody ever notices the backup singers. So nobody ever says, I've got great photos of backup singers. It's always, I've got a great photo of Tina Turner, and then in the background there happens to be a great setup of backup singers. So I had to do all this research of the stars that had backup singers to then actually find the footage. And every time I'd find one of these nuggets, it was just incredible. But, you know, Luther was one of those. He was the Pied Piper of backup singers. I mean, there were a few kind of colleges for backup singers. You know, the Raelettes that Mary Clayton was in was one. So many great singers went through the Raelettes. Mm-hmm. The Iketts with Ike. You know, Ike was a big Ray fan, so he had to have the Iketts. And then Bette Midler was a big Ike fan, so she had the Harlettes. And Luther was the other one. So many other great singers went through Luther's backgrounds over the years. So mm-hmm. they were all really, you know, teachers.
Did you find that, you know, there are some of the big stars in your film. They're not the stars of the film, but, you know, Springsteen, Sting, you know, people like that. Did you find that these people were really kind of eager to give props to their backup singers?
Absolutely. I mean, it's something none of them had ever talked about before, but they know better than anybody what those singers bring to them. And I think it was just a huge chance for them to give something back to people they actually knew really well and had worked with for years, but had never said anything about.
The movie's called 20 Feet from Stardom, a film that focuses on backup singers, and Morgan Neville directed it. I love the beginning, you know, the big names all with the colored dots obscuring their faces so that your eye goes to the backup singers. And while you're looking at that, we are hearing Lou Reed's Walk on the Wild Side, a telling choice. Tell us why you made that choice.
I mean, that song, you know, his allusion, and, you know, at the end, you know, and the colored girls sing, you know, at the end of that. And, you know, maybe he's doing it with some irony, but he's alluding to that iconic idea of the three African-American women, probably in the black dresses on the side of the stage, bringing soul right into the music. And that was really the revolution that I wanted to cover in this film, and something these ladies were a huge, huge part of.
Well, we'll speak with both Mary and Darlene in a moment, but this is how Morgan's film 20 Feet from Stardom starts.
On the wild side, and the colored girls say, doo 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 doo.
To what it is that we do. No one till right now has publicly acknowledged it. But people love to see the background singers. I mean, when you think about Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side, you know, that iconic song with the line that makes a lot of people uncomfortable because it says colored girls. But what is he referencing when he says, and the colored girls say, doot, 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 doot. The fact that there's a power to these women that stand on stage and sing with these guys.
A little bit of the film 20 Feet from Stardom, directed by Morgan Neville, focusing on some of the great background singers of music over the past 40, 50 years. Janice Pendarvis, Morgan, is who we hear talking about Lou Reed's song, Walk on the Wild Side. Why are so many of the great backup singers African-American?
I mean, there was a tradition of backup singing before these ladies came along, which was the kind of, you know, white bread, tight harmony, no vibrato kind of singing that you get. But what these women brought with them was the church. Mm-hmm. You know, they brought incredible soul, and they weren't, you know, as Darlene talks about, they weren't readers. They weren't people that just sang the notes exactly as they were on the page.
All right, let me unleash Darlene and Mary at this point.
Perfect.
We're jumping at the bit.
Mary, did you get started in the church?
Absolutely. My father was a minister in New Orleans, and our church would always welcome Mahalia ladies and artists like Mahalia Jackson and Sam Cooke and Linda Hopkins. And these were the people I saw on the regular at my father's church in New Orleans. And I always sung in the choir, always sung. If you were a pastor's child, you were going to sing in the choir, and you were going to sing wherever they wanted you to sing, when they wanted you to sing. Darlene's father was a pastor, too.
And where was that, Darlene?
Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had three brothers and a sister, and my father being a pastor, when you have that big family, we're in the Sunday school, we're in the choir, we are the church
right.
at some time or another.
So when you start singing, you know, usually in groups of twos and threes and fours behind someone else, are you still the church? I mean, are you still the church choir?
Oh, yeah. I don't
Absolutely.
Think that ever leaves
Mm-mm.
us. That's that whole idea of, we call it preach and respond. Mm-hmm. The preacher preaches, and
right.
we say, yeah, preach it, honey.
Amen.
Yeah, go, amen. And that's the same thing we're actually doing when we're singing background.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Darlene, you've had such an unusual career. I mean, you did some lead vocal work for Phil Spector.
Right.
Which I don't think it will surprise anyone who knows anything about Phil Spector to learn that you didn't actually get credited for it.
No, I started out as a backup singer when I recorded the record, He's a Rebel, and I knew I was going to be a backup singer for that record. I didn't care that much for the record. Ain't going to be no hit anyway, so let me make a lot of money and go on my merry way. Mm-hmm. But within a month, it was climbing the charts and became number one. So I said, he knows how to make records. I need to sign with him. And that's exactly what I did.
The song is He's a Rebel, credited to The Crystals and heard in the film 20 Feet from Stardom.
See the way he walks down the street. That's the way he shuffles his feet. My ho, his head up high when he goes walking by. He's my guy. When he holds my hand, I'm so proud. Cause he's not just one of
bit of He's a Rebel, credited to The Crystals, but let's be clear about this, Darlene. That's you.
That is me singing lead.
Lead singer.
And The Blossoms singing background.
Mm-hmm. So, and The Blossoms were...
They were a group in Los Angeles, and I joined their group after they formed.
And you guys, as The Blossoms, would back up lots of other people as they came through.
Yeah, that's how we started in the business. Actually, The Blossoms were also called The Dreamers. They were backup singers for Richard Berry when he started in the business. And then they got their own name, The Blossoms, and we ended up being background singers for everybody in California.
Right. So you were a background singer, even though you had this hit song as a lead singer.
Yes, uh-huh.
All right.
Phil Spector produced it. I had a wonderful career. Sometimes I wonder why I stopped singing background.
We're speaking with Darlene Love, the vocalist. You'll also know her as an actor in the film, the Lethal Weapon films and the Broadway Hairspray production. And Mary Clayton, you also had a kind of a set group of background singers that you worked with, right?
Yes, I worked with a bunch of ladies. They were called the Blackberries. It was Clydie King, Vanetta Fields, Shirley Matthews, Brenda Holloway, Billy Barnum, Edna Wright, before she started with, what's the name of the group,
Honeycomb.
Darlene? The Honeycomb, before mm-hmm. she started lead with The Honeycomb. We all did studio work together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was a joy to kind of hang out together in the studios all the time.
Now, how different was the experience of being a backup singer in the studio from being a backup singer live, you know, in an arena full of 20,000 screaming fans?
Well, I mean, it wasn't really a difference, I didn't think. It was just, you know, it was just for a larger group.
Uh-huh.
You know, but you did the same thing, but it was just for a larger audience, I think.
Yeah, but you couldn't roll out of bed with curlers in your hair.
No.
You know what? The difference is, when you're in the studio, you got to stand in front of that mic.
Oh, yeah,
you can't
true.
Pop your fingers.
That's
you
true.
Can't move. There is a difference.
Yeah.
When you get out there in the audience, they mic your mics where you can move because they want you to do little moves and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the biggest difference.
So, Mary, I mean, the story of how you came to record the extraordinary backing vocals on Gimme Shelter is it was like 2 a.m. and you rolled out of bed and...
yeah, and went to the studio. Jack Nitzsche called and said...
The producer?
The producer, Jack Nitzsche. He said there was a group in town called The Rolling, and that's all I heard. And then the phone was taken from me and given to my husband and wondering, why is he calling so late? So he said, I can't get anybody to sing with these guys, and you have to come to the studio. I think this would be good for you. So I rolled out, pregnant belly, and pink silk pajamas, and put a Chanel scarf on, and put on a fur coat. And they sent a car for me, and I went to do Gimme Shelter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now this, Morgan Neville, the director of the film 20 Feet from Stardom, this is the moment that stopped me in the movie. And I understand that whenever this has been screened, the moment where we hear Mary without the rest of the band, you know, you've isolated just the vocal track, is extraordinary. It's spine tingling.
it's a revelation. I mean, it's like, you know, when you can pull apart a song like that, like we did with He's a Rebel as well. I mean, it's like you're going back to, you know, being able to take apart the pyramids, or, you know, it's the Rosetta Stone. Like, you're taking apart things that are so completely entrenched in our minds, and to be able to take them apart and hear what actually goes into them and hear the vocals by themselves is just revelatory.
So here's a little bit of the Rolling Stones' Gimme Shelter. Yes, Mick Jagger singing, but so is Mary Clayton. And then from the movie, 20 Feet from Stardom, what we're talking about, the moment where you hear just Mary's voice solo. Who's whooping in the background? Is that Mick?
That's Mick and Keith in the booth, behind the booth, carrying on. Yeah. I don't know how they captured that. Someone had a mic or something, but they were hooting and hollering back there. I saw them, but I didn't hear them because I was out in the studio.
And your voice does some pretty classic cracking when you hit the really high note on
yeah,
the
because
third
I was
time
about
you
to pee on myself.
No, that's not what I want to hear. No. You got to tell me that it was, you were emoting, you were feeling the song.
I was leaning on a stool trying to keep from wetting on myself
because the song was so high.
That's the truth about it.
Oh, my. Learning more than we ever needed to know about the lives of backup singers.
That's right. The film
is called 20 Feet from Stardom. Darlene Love and Mary Clayton here with me on soundcheck. Morgan Neville, the director of the movie. Later in the movie, Mary, you're involved in another unusual song choice, mm-hmm. which is Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yes.
You talk in the movie about not wanting to do it, and your husband, 19 years older than you, says to you, you have to sing this song.
Yeah.
You say why. He says you'll understand when you're older.
Yeah, and I do understand now.
So what?
Well, at that time, there was a lot of racial unrest in the South. No one wanted to sing anything about Alabama because they had just bombed a church where four little girls died. And there were hoses being put on people, and there were dogs being sicked on people. There was war, and you know, there was war all over, you know.
And you had a governor there saying segregation forever.
You can't get in school, and he's going to stand at the door. And, you know, we couldn't be on the front lines, because I know had I been on the front lines, I wouldn't be here talking to you. So because we couldn't be on the front lines, like with my father and with some other relatives in my family, because I couldn't do that, my husband said, you know what? Let this be your protest. This and Sweet Home Alabama and the other song that I did in the movie that I did with my band. What was the name of the song, Morgan?
I think you did Sweet Home Alabama with
your band.
Sweet Home Alabama, Southern Man.
Southern Man.
Southern Man, you better keep your head.
And I did these songs, and it was a platform that I had to give me a voice as to how I felt about what was going on.
The movie is called 20 Feet from Stardom. It focuses on the lives and careers of some of the great voices of American popular music, but not the ones that are on the cover, the ones that are in the back. And Darlene, I mean, since you've done both lead and backing vocals, is there a different approach to singing when you know your job is to kind of fit into the harmony and not sort of carry the tune?
Well, you know, because us coming out of church, being in choirs, we had to learn how to sing harmony.
Mm-hmm.
We had a lead singer. That's what she was, but we called her the leader of our song.
Mm-hmm.
And we would back her up. So early in our lives, we learned how to blend.
Yes.
Nobody's voice could stick out. So we had to listen to one another and do inflections sometime together, you know, do little runs. We had to do that together. So it became a joy. Actually, it ended up being fun because we could do those kind of things. And then record producers ended up depending on us to do those kind of things when we went into recording sessions.
And what would you be faced with when you came to a recording session? Would you be given sheet music and be expected to, like, kind of read notated music, or would you just sort of, like, just go for it?
No, one thing, early, I worked with Lou Adler.
Mm-hmm.
And
another great producer.
Yes, and he would say, okay, hear the song, girl. Now, what do you hear? And because we've done it and we had such great ears with harmony and everything, everybody could come up with something. Somebody say, oh, no, let's do some words here. Let's say words behind them. Then let's do some ahs or all the doop, 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 doop.
And it was always the blend. It was always the blend of those voices. See, when I was 14 years old, Darlene and the Blossoms, Fenita James, would pick me up to do sessions. And it was Darlene, basically, honestly, who taught me how to blend singing background in the studio. You couldn't do what you did in church in the studio.
Mm.
You had to learn how to blend with other voices.
Now, there's a moment in the movie where somebody talks about the British invasion, you know, the British rock bands, and how that kind of really changed, that maybe in the 60s you had to smooth out the sound, no rough edges, but that the British rockers wanted those rough edges. Did that really change things for you?
That didn't change things for us. Maybe it did for a lot of other singers, because the British singers knew us. We didn't know them.
Mm-mm.
But people in Britain really go into the history of music, and they loved black music.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew us, like when I was doing the television shindig with the Blossoms.
Mm-hmm.
When they came to do that show, they were just as excited to meet us as we were them. So they knew about what we did. So it
these are people who read liner notes. They knew who the band
knew
was.
Liner notes.
Yeah.
That's right.
I remember being with Ray Charles at a very young age, and we landed. The first tour I did with him was a European tour. And there were people with my records from Capitol from 14 years old, could hardly speak English, and would say, oh, you signed it for me. You signed. And they had all of these records. Pictures I never knew existed, you know, and they know your history. So they're always embedded into what you have done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Morgan, Morgan Neville is also here. He directed the film.
Keep my mouth shut.
You might have forgotten that. It's been a while. There's a moment in the film where you focus on Lisa Fisher, who won a Grammy, but then decided, that's not really the career path I'm going to pursue. I'm going to go back to being a backup singer. So, I mean, is it, at some point it raises the question, is it okay to be satisfied with being a great backup singer? You know, it's almost like culturally we expect if you're that good at that you're going to move up to do something else.
And that's, you know, one of the central themes of the film, because everybody has a different path and a different relationship to stardom. And Lisa's is so interesting because she's somebody that had success but really was more comfortable in the backup world. And she's great with that. I mean, she's had an incredible career as, you know, the backup singer. I mean, she's amazing. And, you know, people like her and many singers I talked to, the Waters family, legendary family of backup singers, and they would say things like, you know, people come along and they have a hit and they have a 3-year career and we sing with them, or 5-year career, and then they're gone. And, you know, we've been getting paid to do this for 50 years. We've had families and houses and nice lives, and we get paid to do what we love. And that's a great, great life.
Well, Lisa Fisher, a great voice, whether up front or in the back, this is her song, How Can I Ease the Pain?
Come back again. How can I
Lisa Fisher, yes. How Can I Ease the Pain? She won a Grammy, and Morgan, she's not here with us today. Why?
She's on the road with the Stones, you know, which is amazing. She's had that gig for 25 years.
Mary, she sings your role in Gimme Shelter nowadays.
Yes, she does, and she does it very well.
Now, both of you, Darlene, Mary, you've both had long careers. You have done, you know, solo things, lead vocal work as well. Who's out there now? What is the current state of backing singers? I mean, are there people out there that the two of you listen to and think, oh, these...
There are no backup singers anymore.
That's over.
That started going away probably about the mid-80s.
Mm-hmm.
When people started bringing in their own backup singers, their cousins, their sisters, or whoever, or the band members started singing. And what had happened to a lot of the background singers, especially like the Waters and Lisa and the Sweet Inspirations, they're all on the road now backing people. So they're making a fantastic living by doing that. And somebody like Lisa Fisher can demand unbelievable payment for what she's doing.
Everybody became self-contained.
Yeah.
Everybody became self-contained.
All the groups,
you know.
Well, and I'll just say, it's not just that they haven't gone away. They've just gone on the road. You know, the studio days are gone.
Right.
And like most musicians today have to make money touring, not through record sales.
Right.
Backup singers have to do the same thing.
So,
and you know what? It's all about, too. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Everybody's have studios.
They hear me all the time on this show. We don't get a chance.
Everybody
to hear
has
you.
Studios in their own houses now. And they can sit down and put their, if they can sing a little bit, they can put their voices on.
And
two
then
or
the mother
times.
Comes in, the brother comes in, maybe somebody, the children come
whatever.
In.
Whatever.
Maybe
so,
somebody from next door that could try to sing. They and, come in and they're the background.
Right. And if they can't quite hit the notes, there's always auto-tune.
Yes.
That's it.
Yes. Yes.
Gone are the great days when we used three tracks. And today is a couple of hundred.
So do you feel like, Mary, Darlene, do you guys feel like you are representing the end of an era, a bygone era? Has music changed that much that...
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it has.
It has. And you know what? People don't...
Yes, it has.
One thing that we've found out about background singers, they don't want to be background singers anymore. And, you know, you find it hard for people... to want to be, we thought about it as being a joy. We enjoyed doing it. We were creating, you know. And they look at it as a drag, child. I ain't going to be seen doing no background.
I don't want to sing no background. I don't want to sing it because if I sing it and I'll get caught up in the background, I'll never be a lead singer. I'll never get a deal. That's what the young kids think now, you know. I mean, it's the truth. That's what they think.
Well, but, God, there are decades of records that give us all the evidence we need of just how important the role of the backup singer is. And then, of course, there is this movie, this new film from Morgan Neville called 20 Feet from Stardom. It's at the Angelica Film Center here in New York and also at the Eleanor Bunnen Monroe Film Center at Lincoln Center. Morgan Neville, the director, Darlene Love, Mary Clayton, two of the great voices in the film. Thank you all for being with us
today.
Thanks
for having
Thank
us.
You.
This
Thank
is Soundcheck. Up next, a look at new releases from Primal Scream, Mavis Staples, and Kanye West. And later, a live performance in our studio from Irish singer-songwriter Julie Feeney. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Last month, Kanye West fans got a sneak peek at his new album, Yeezus, when he performed this song, Black Skinhead, on Saturday Night Live. But this past weekend, many fans got a peek at the whole record when Yeezus leaked, as these things are wont to do, a few days before its official release date. That official release date was today, and so we are joined by music writer Lizzie Goodman to look at that and a couple of other new releases. Hey, Lizzie.
Hey there.
So, big news. You've had a little time to spend with Yeezus. What do you think?
Oh, it's fantastic. I love him. I mean, Kanye is one of those artists that's it's a kind of wait. Everyone waits with bated breath for his next opus. And no matter how much he talks himself up, you think, okay, this is going to be the time he's going to inevitably disappoint us. Because really, Yeezus? You titled this Yeezus? Like, this is going to be the moment. I got to tell you, I think the record is fantastic. He talks the talk and he walks the walk.
But Yeezus? And there's a song called I Am a God.
Hey, man, it wouldn't have been my pick. but, I mean, no, it's true. The arrogance and the ego and the swagger is a little tiresome. But the thing that, in all seriousness, the thing that I love that he does is, in terms of kind of that matches that arrogance, is he asks for that of himself. Like, yeah. I'm not sure if I would call him a god, but I understand why he thinks he's one.
So, but it's almost as if he's daring himself to be bigger, stronger, faster, you know, to be better every
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Yeah, it does seem like that. It's like this is, you sort of understand, it's almost like we're all Kanye's shrink, and you kind of understand that this is the talk he has to talk in order to motivate himself to create these. I mean, it's a visceral, layered kind of, it samples every musical genre that we're currently into, but is still totally a traditional hip-hop record in a lot of ways. I mean, he's just doing a lot, and so maybe he needs to pump himself up, and we have to just tolerate that process in the meantime.
So, speaking of sampling, this song Blood on the Leaves features a sample of Nina Simone's version of the song Strange Fruit.
Yeah.
Which is you know, that's a long time racially charged, provocative song.
It's a move. You know, when I heard because the song opens and you just hear Nina Simone's voice and the sample, and I kind of just, you know, smacked my hand against my head. Like, Kanye, really? Like, talk about hallowed ground. You kind of don't go there. And it's so far my favorite song on the record.
Blood on the Leaves from the new album Yeezus by Kanye West.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Blood on the leaves.
I just need to clear my mind now. It's been racing since the summertime.
Please.
Now I'm holding down the summer now.
Please.
And all I want is what I can't buy now.
Blood on
Cause
the
I ain't got the money on me right now. And I told you to wait. Yeah, I told you to wait. So I'ma need a little more time now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I thought you could wait. Yeah, I thought you could wait. These bitches surrounding me. Oh, want something now, man. Then they talk about me. Would be lost without me. We could have been somebody. Thought you'd be different about it. Now I know you're not it. So let's get on with it. We could have been somebody. Said you had to tell somebody. Let's take it back to the first party. When you tried your first smile. It came out of your body. It came out of your body. Running naked down the lobby. And you were screaming that you love me.
From the brand new Kanye West record, Yeezus, that's called Blood on the Leaves. Lizzie Goodman, he's singing again, at least at times. And then there's that Nina Simone sample of Strange Fruit, which seems to have altered its pitch, you know, been maybe shifted up a couple of notes.
Yeah, it does seem like they've played with it a little bit.
Yeah.
That song in particular shows that even he's willing to go where you think no one should go musically, but it's also reverential. He holds himself in such high regard, and it's sort of like what he borrows is then also elevated. Everything is respectful by association with the greatness that is Kanye. You know, that seems to be how he treats this. And people are responding. You're hearing this. This is the record that everyone has to play the second it comes out.
So Lizzie Goodman, the music writer, is here talking about some new releases. And obviously this new Kanye West record is going to cast a pretty big shadow. But there are other things worth checking out, talking about. One of them is the return of the band Primal Scream.
Yeah, you know, it's a good follow-up to the Kanye album, I think, in terms of conversation points, because this is a band who are responsible in a lot of ways for inventing or at least popularizing many of the kind of sampling techniques that you now see in a lot of alternative music. Not hip-hop, but in terms of electro and understanding how to merge, you know, EDM. We're all listening to EDM now. And
electronic dance music.
Yeah, and the idea of being able to kind of borrow, I don't know, a snippet of a French film that you love and insert it into a song and then do some spoken word poetry and that's all a rock record, that's a Primal Scream ideology. And the Daft Punk album has obviously been a big release that a lot of people have been paying attention to lately. And I saw that they routinely, when asked who influenced them, name Screamadelica, Primal Scream's perhaps most famous album. So they're in there, and what they've done is relevant to what we're hearing now. So it's nice to hear what they're doing now.
Mm-hmm. You've picked for us the opening track, which is like epic. I mean, 9-minute long song, a strange video to go with it. What is
they don't,
this?
Subtlety is not a Primal Scream specialty. This is, you know, among the first tracks that were released from this album. And that's kind of what I love about them. It's like, yes, this is our 10th record. Yes, we are us. And yes, we are sort of imperious enough to release a 10-minute epic as our first single or among our first singles. But, you know, the song is great.
It's called 2013 from the band Primal Scream.
21st century slaves, a peasant underclass. Television propaganda fair, how long will this shit last? Punk rock came and really nothing changed, wasn't just a pose. Every generation buys a lie.
Primal Scream, the veteran Scottish rockers, their new album called More Light, and Lizzie Goodman, music writer here with three of her favorite new releases, picking that opening track called 2013. All right, another new release, and this is a great old voice that's been with us for many years, Mavis Staples. New record. What more do you need to say?
I know, exactly. Well, actually, I mean, that is as it should be. But it's interesting. One of the things I love about the trajectory of Mavis's career is, you know, there's been so many different moments in which she would have seemed to have established herself as a kind of part of the endless canon of music. She was, you know, in this incredible gospel group as a young woman, and her family is the whole family connection, the tradition of that.
And the Staple Singers.
The
yeah.
Staple Singers and a true gospel star. And then she had this sort of, her music and her family's music, the Staple Singers' music, had this role in the civil rights movement, and there was her connection to Bob Dylan. And so you're thinking, well, that, you know, I'd like to read that biography. But then there's been about four different reinventions since then. And honestly, lately, she's in one of her most interesting, because it feels to me that even though, you know, we're in a kind of later stage of her career, she's really hitting a solo stride. This record and the one before it, which both of which she's worked with Jeff Tweedy on
of Wilco,
from Wilco.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's unlocked something new in her. It's really interesting to see.
All right, we're gonna hear a song called Can You Get to That from the new Mavis Staples record, One True Vine. Lizzie Goodman, good to see you again. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck.
Well, I once had a life, or rather, life had me. I was the one among the many, or at least I seemed to be. Well, I read an old quotation just yesterday, said you're gonna reap just what you sow. The debts you make, you'll have to pay. Can you get to that?
Can You Get to That? Mavis Staples covering an old Funkadelic song that originally appeared on their 1971 album Maggot Brain. But this version is on the new album One True Vine from Mavis Staples. Up next, the Irish singer-songwriter Julie Feeney returns to our studio to perform songs from her new album Clocks. This is Soundcheck.
When you base your life on credit and your loving days are done, tonight, waiting in the water. Julia, Julia.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When the Irish singer-songwriter Julie Feeney first visited Soundcheck 2 years ago, I was actually on vacation, but I heard all about it from the staff when I got back. The charming chamber pop songs and the snazzy hat. Now Julie Feeney is back with a new album called Clocks. It debuted at number one on the independent Irish music charts and was the Irish Times 2012 Album of the Year. It was recently released here in the States. Clocks focuses on some fascinating discoveries that Julie made while researching her family tree. We'll ask her about that in a few minutes. First, though, here's a song from Julie Feeney and a stripped-down version of her band with Galway Boy live on Soundcheck.
She was serene when there were wicks in the grain. When it was complicated, she let him be, but she ruled as easy as water off a little duck's back for pistachio. She built a sanctuary. She sings, go way by, I love you. My eyes are white for you. I delight in the fire in you. I smile when I think of you. Ever tender tears for you. Ever fastening falls, ever standing tall, far, ever my boy from Galway. She was serene when there were wigs in the grain. When it was complicated, she let him be, but she ruled as easy as water off a little duck's back for posterity. She built a sanctuary, she sings Galway boy, I'd sight for you. Your geysers I'd bind for you. Your ideas I hold true. Your expounded I'd listen to. Ever tender tears for you. Ever fastening falls. Ever standing tall far. Ever my boy from Galway. She was serene when there were wigs in the green. When it was complicated, she let him be, but she ruled as easy as water off a little duck's back for posterity. She built a sanctuary. She was serene when there were wicks in the grain. When it was complicated, she let him be, but she ruled as easy as water off a little duck's back for posterity. She built a sanctuary. She sings, go away, boy, I dream with you. By night I fly with you. Miracles I wish for you. I'm spinning auras round you. Ever tender tears for you. Ever fastening falls. Ever standing tall far. Ever my boy from Galway. She was serene when there were wicks in the grain. When it was complicated, she let him be, but she ruled as easy as water off a little duck's back for posterity. She built a sanctuary. She was serene when there were wicks in the grain. When it was complicated, she let him be, but she ruled as easy as water off a little duck's back for posterity. She built a sanctuary.
Galway Boy is the name of that song from Irish singer, songwriter, and pianist Julie Feeney. With Maeve O'Hara on violin and backing vocals from Jennifer Marshall, that is from Julie Feeney's most recent album called Clocks. And Julie, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John. It's a real privilege to be here.
I was not here the first time you were here.
Yeah.
I was on vacation, but it's great to have a chance to meet you.
And yeah.
So Galway boy. I mean, are your family roots in Galway?
At least six generations.
Wow.
Yeah, which I only discovered in the last year as if I didn't have enough to be doing. It's kind of addictive when you do start going into your family tree. And the only thing is then you, I mean, people say you have to be careful because, you know, you might find something you don't like. So, you know, you do have to be a bit wary. So I haven't really found anything yet, apart from the couple of tricky men, you know, slightly problematic. Wonderful too, but, you know, the tricky ones. That's sort of like, that's what that Galway boy.
Did you find any wild geese in the family, you know, emigres to the United States?
Yeah, there were a couple that were involved in the boycotting, you know, so they wouldn't have been too happy about the landlords being there. But as you would expect, I mean, naturally, you know, you don't want, you know, if people have a bit of spirit and a bit of, they want to protect their own, their own land, as you would expect. You know what I mean? It's not, you know, if you're being completely unpolitical about it, the fact is that's kind of good to hear that people had a bit of spirit. So I think there are some Joyces here. There would be Morans, Feeneys, Murphys, a lot of them over here. So I've a couple of cousins in the New York Philharmonic, actually.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, now,
yeah.
I mean, when I think of Galway, being a horse racing fan, I think of the Galway races, but also Galway is known as a center of kind of like Irish language and traditional Irish music. Mm-hmm. You have obviously gone in a very different direction.
I have, yeah. I mean, I've absorbed that too completely. I speak Irish and I absolutely adore Irish music, but what I've picked from Irish music is the kind of phrasing. There's a beautiful phrasing within this, like it's under the fibre of the music. I find it a very complex, very, very beautiful music. And I've always, I've had it in my blood, but I'm not a traditional player by any degree. And when I perform it, it's an abstraction, you know, it's an interpretation of what I hear as a composer, you know, that's how I kind of approach it.
Right.
But it's definitely, I mean, it's definitely in my blood, you know, I can feel it.
Well, so the album Clocks is, you know, full of orchestral or chamber orchestra sounds. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to perform these songs live? I mean, you have to really kind of get to the heart of the song, don't you?
Well, the great thing is you're kind of reducing motifically what you've got. You know, you've got the melodies. You decide on the particular performance. Every performance I do is actually quite different, you know. I mean, I'm doing a big concert with the RT Concert Orchestra in the summer. So, you know,
National radio and the TV national in Ireland.
Yeah, the orchestra over there. And that'll be great. But you know what? You don't always want a full orchestra. I mean, even when I did even this album, Clocks or Pages, I had a chamber orchestra. But sometimes a full orchestra is fabulous, but it's just a bit too much. You know, you kind of like the rawness of a smaller group. I actually really love chamber. I mean, yes, it's an amazing thrill to have a huge orchestra behind you. There's nothing like that. But you know, to listen to, you know, it's overwhelming, but it's kind of like going to the cinema and hearing something really, really loud. It's like, wow, it's really loud. I'm really impressed. But and it is wonderful, but you do, I really love also the very chamber sound, you know, the broken down kind of sound too. So it's challenging each time, but it's much more rewarding that way.
A challenge to me has been to keep this conversation focused on music when I can't take my eyes off your necklace.
Oh, yeah. This is Joanne Hines.
Who is that?
Joanne Hines is an Irish designer. She's actually from Galway as well. She's very well known in Ireland, yeah. And she gives me things to wear.
So I didn't even realize it was a necklace when I first walked in here and saw it. I mean,
it's tied on, yeah.
It's this enormous, I mean, I don't really know how to describe it.
I should know, but I don't. You know, so Joanne, I'm mentioning your name, but I don't know what your necklace is made of. It looks great, though.
It's black and shiny, and
netting on it, and yeah.
It's not a clock. You haven't gone that route.
Oh no, I have. Well, I have a clock's headpiece. Yeah, I do have a clock's headpiece, and I have a clock's dress. I had a Pages dress for the last album, made out of the pages of the orchestral score.
Well, for folks who are wondering what we're talking about, there is a photo on the website. Check it out, soundcheck.org. Julie Feeney, the Irish singer and songwriter. Why don't we hear another song? This one's called If I Lose You Tonight, and it's from Julie Feeney's latest album, Clocks.
If I lose you tonight, my love, will I ever know the ache in you? Will your soul soothe the toil and your mind, or will the pain ever soften? If I lose you your soul build a haven. If I lose you tonight, my love, will you hold fort around the blue? Will you guard the wall around your heart, my love? Is there a furrow left to step through? Dispel and thin, will the sadness behind your eyes weave my love and let the crevice small to begin?
That is Julie Feeney, solo, here in the Soundcheck studio in a song called If I Lose You Tonight. Julie, we were talking before about, you know, you said you sort of absorbed traditional Irish music. If you told me that that was not an original song that you just wrote recently, mm-hmm. but rather some 19th century Irish ballad, I would totally have believed that.
Yeah, I know. It's a funny thing. Like, when you're composing music, you know, if you come from the tradition that I come from, such a rich tradition, and, you know, so I'm like, I write everything original, I compose all my music and orchestrate and all that. But, I mean, the other side of it is part of, it's in my blood, it's in my, it just comes out, you know, and it shouldn't be, I know I said earlier that if I do traditional, it's sort of my version of it. So I suppose that is my version. But really, what I think comes out as an Irish person is the forlorn, and there's a sort of a loneliness that I think that just comes out if you're Irish, that it's a pain thing. And I mean, I must look into it more. I don't know where it's coming from, but like, you really get down into it.
Well, that song really, you know, just you at the piano, about as stripped down as it can be.
Yeah.
Beautiful. I mean,
well, thank you.
Julie Feeney, it's been great having you back here
in
our
so
Soundcheck
much.
Studio. This is Soundcheck.
Shut down like hazel juicing drown.
Will you eat humble pie and turn a blind eye? And oh, now the elephant's in the room. Fairy tale is askew.
Tomorrow on the show, our look at music in summer movies continues with Greta Gerwig. She's starring in the new film Frances Ha, with a key scene that uses a David Bowie classic. Greta will give us a pick three of new music that she's loving right now. Plus, composer Marco Beltrami talks about the best way to create a soundtrack for the zombie apocalypse, using skulls as percussion instruments. We'll hear about his music for the film World War Z. And live music from the Argentine bandoneon player J.P. Joffrey. We'll leave you with a little more music from Julie Feeney. See you back here tomorrow at 9. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.
A moment out of the blue, after the moment you're knocked down, like a haze inducing crowd. Ah, but faces were light for you. How great a fighter were you?